for another edition of Gospel Nobodies, a podcast sponsored by the Rural Collective, which is Acts 29's intentional endeavor to promote, validate, recruit for rural church planting. And we honestly believe that the glory, the knowledge of the glory of God, just like it covers the waters cover the sea, should cover the earth. And that means every little village, hamlet, and forgotten place. And so Gospel Nobodies is a discussion with rural church planters. And today, Jeremy Buck from Pampa, Texas is with us. Thank you for being here, Jeremy.
Yeah, glad to be here today, David.
Yeah, I've got some interesting questions because I've never been to Pampa, never been to the panhandle of Texas. And so looking forward to some of that. But as we discuss things with Jeremy, if you're tuning in live and you want to shoot some questions in, we will try to respond to that or comments. And so if feel free to try to interact in that regard. So Jeremy, Pampa is your hometown.
Yes, sir. Yeah, my kids are the sixth generation of our family here in Pampa.
My goodness. Like, how many of those generations were born in the same hospital?
There's actually been a couple different hospitals here in town.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's probably been three hospitals, so there's two generations in each hospital.
So tell us about Pampa. I mean, I didn't know about it before I met you, and I'm suspecting most people don't.
Yeah, so Pampa is at the very top of Texas. We're just an hour from the Oklahoma border. Can be to Kansas pretty quick as well, so we're at the very top of Texas. About 17,000 folks here. Is the next is the first town of any substantial size, and it's about 200,000, and we are an hour north of there. So, yeah. So even though 17,000, I know you got listeners and watchers who are in much smaller places. We are definitely kind of remote. It's an oil and cattle town.
Oil and cattle. It's funny when you get talk about we're talking to people in rural settings, or especially rural church planting, rural pastoral ministry. It's not a discussion like how big your church is or any of that stuff. It's like, how small is your town?
Right, how small,
and,
yeah.
Like, is 17,000 really a legitimate rural community?
Right, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, like, so we don't argue those numbers, but and one of the other things that stands out to me about Pampa is your climate. You were talking, here it is November, what, 25th? And you woke up this morning, it was 20 degrees, right? Something like that.
Yeah, it was 30 this morning. And so we definitely get all four seasons, which a lot of Texas doesn't. So we've already had snow and ice for 4 or 5 days this season. And big snows are occasional. We don't get them every year, but definitely can get a couple feet of snow. And we have the hot weather in the summer and a few days of spring and a few days of fall in between. So,
wow. We were talking, I'm up in New Hampshire. I forgot to introduce myself, David Pinckney. I pastor River of Grace Church. I serve as a strategist with the Rural Collective and Churches in Hard Places. And just a climate topic here in November in New Hampshire, thinking it's very similar to Pampa, Texas. I just never crossed my mind that something in Texas would relate to something in New Hampshire. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about like how you came to Jesus and how you ended up planting a church in your hometown.
Okay. Yeah. So, God was gracious enough. I was raised in a believing home. Both of my grandfathers were deacons in Baptist churches, one in Texas, one in Oklahoma. Mom and dad, who both loved Jesus and had us in church. And so definitely grew up hearing the gospel, made a confession of faith in probably first grade. I was about seven and loved Jesus, but was definitely a little legalist and worried very much about my reputation. And so learned to act right, but struggled with grace. And it wasn't really until I was probably a freshman or sophomore in high school where this overwhelming sense of the glory of God hit me, that he did not need me to be on his team. I was not an asset that he was looking to collect, but that maybe that was the first time I knew I was a gospel nobody, David. And yet in that there was freedom, that I didn't have to live for my story or my legacy. I didn't have to be remembered because I was being invited into a much bigger story. And so really I was 15, 16 years old when that the beauty of the gospel hit me and knew I wanted to give my life to pastoral ministry. And so have spent time in the Middle East working with the International Mission Board, and came back to the States with my wife, Carmen. We've been married 18 years next month. Have three kiddos, a daughter 11, son that's 5, and another one that's almost 2. And had always loved Pampa. My wife is from a smaller town, about 2,000 people. The name of the town is actually Panhandle, which is confusing because it's in the Panhandle.
Panhandle and Panhandle.
That's right. And it's about 20 minutes away. And she grew up there. Her dad farmed, grandfather farmed. So this is just home for us. And just really believed you shouldn't have to live in a larger place to be a part of a healthy church. And we just saw a need. I was working on staff at a local church here in Pampa as a student minister. And as we began to discuss the changing complexities of Pampa, we're going from a little more of an upper middle class community to a more diverse and a little poorer, less educated place over the last 20 years. We just saw a hole that some folks were being missed. And so the church said, listen, we don't really have a branch of church planting. This was in 2010, 2011. We're almost 10 years old. But we think you're the guy, and we will encourage you to go do it. We just don't know how to help you do it. And so we set out to plant a church. The best that we can find, there maybe hadn't been a church plant in Pampa since the 60s.
Wow.
Someone might be able to correct me there, but the most recent we had found was 1962.
Man, I always want to back up and say that as a young teenager, for you to discover the glory of God and converting sinners and inviting them into his story. I just find those to be glorious stories. I push back against people who talk about, well, I don't have a good, come to Jesus story. I hadn't been, a crazy alcoholic or what, all those things that often people correlate with amazing, and thank God for those transformative stories. But when Jesus comes to children and teenagers, that's to me more glorious, because it's kind of like the angel Gabriel coming to Mary is kind of like who would have picked a teenager to convert like that? So that's really cool. And then your call to ministry, your call to the church, was there any specific thing that sort of like struck you about church planting or planting in Pampa that?
So David, I think as you look at the grace of God to save me as a teenager, I believe that's a huge component of why we were able to plant in Pampa. That I was able to take a deposit out on my family's good name and the fact that people knew me. So there were a lot of folks who said, we don't understand why you're doing this or why you want to do this, but we trust you and we've seen the Lord working in your life. And so we're willing to at least give you some rope to see if this goes well. And so I think that played into it. The fact that the Lord had just been kind, that I hadn't been too big of a bonehead, at least.
Yep.
Not that I didn't have my foibles and my sin, but the Lord had saved me at such a young age that I avoided a lot of public shame. And so it's then going to the Middle East and coming back. I think it had grown us up enough in people's eyes. I mean, I was young. I was in my 20s when we planted, and there was a farmer here in town who's an elder of ours now. And I remember sitting in his pickup truck on a Sunday night after a deacon's meeting. And I said, man, I just don't know that anyone older than me would ever come. Like, why would they show up? And this man who could have been my father, respected, he goes, man, you're already my pastor. And not even knowing that I needed to hear that, this was being gracious to me in his kind words, that he did not laugh me off and say, yeah, Pampa doesn't need another church, but that he saw the Lord was stirring something.
Wow. So lessons learned. We are talking about, again, I suspect that most guys listening to this, girls, anybody, wouldn't know where Pampa is.
Right.
What lessons have you learned about having planted in a rural community that is obscure, and being your hometown, I mean, that's probably in the mix. What are some lessons you learned?
One really, really early on, David, was, you know, we all have pride and we all struggle with wanting to succeed in a way that probably gets more attaboys than we would like to admit. And the Lord was just really gracious in planting in an obscure place to let me know, listen, you could hit a home run in Pampa and no one cares. So let's just get after and get to work. And I think one of the most freeing things for me early on was that I didn't feel like there were these milestones or hoops I had to hit as much as maybe a guy would if he was in a college town or a larger city, because we could just, there was no honeymoon. I knew the community, they knew me. And so let's just get our hands dirty and get after it. And so we've really tried to put our roots and our stakes down in just long-term relational ministry, that we've been able to say, listen, we're going to be here. We're going to stay here. We know you. We know your cousin. We know your grandma. You know mine. And let's just lock arms for the long haul. And so seeing kids 10 years ago who were in junior high, who are now young adults, and that we've been able to walk with them in other areas of the community who are now coming into Redeemer as adults, because there's just been this long-standing relationship.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear.
Yeah, that's been super encouraging.
Now, you're part of, I believe, what's called the Redeemer Network there in Texas, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, could you just give a thumbnail sketch of that?
Yeah, so the kind of the first Redeemer Church was in Lubbock. Then myself and a guy, Jordan Elder in Round Rock, and another David Ritchie in Amarillo. We just kind of all popped up at similar times and relationally encouraged and supported one another. And from that, a network has developed of basically 20 churches now across Texas. There's one in Oklahoma and one in Utah. So, and then the other 18 are in Texas that are looking to collaborate together to plant churches. And so the last 2 or 3 years, we're averaging 3, 4, 5 churches a year. And
wow.
So we need to pick up some steam. Redeemer Pampa, we're planting our first out of us in January of 2021 in a small town 20 minutes away from us called Borger, Texas, a guy named Ricky Garzone. And so excited to do that. And so we try to embed a resident in a local church. And then we lean on the pastors across the network to help us collaborate. A guy that's a great preacher, a guy that's a great counselor. We're all just investing in these men over 18 months or 2 years.
Yeah, that's so sweet to hear. Peyton Barron's down in Brady, Texas.
Yeah, he's a part of it. Yes, sir.
Yeah, he is. And he's actually for the South Central region of Rural Collective anyway. He's our go-to guy. We kind of funnel guys to him. But he's part of that network too. So you are in your hometown. I wouldn't know the percentage. I'm going to guess around 50% of the guys who called to plant in rural places are in their hometown or towns they've grown up in.
Right.
And any other lessons from that you would encourage guys who are listening, considering about planting in their hometown, that you would share with them?
Yeah, I think, I think just, I would encourage them to lean into the relationships, like to believe that God's gracious and sovereign hand has been preparing. And so whether it's a teacher, a coach, a neighbor, and what a gift to be able to see folks who once had maybe authority over you and yet didn't know the Lord come to faith through men and women's faithfulness to go back and love a place that is easy not to love sometimes. It's easy to want to move on to something that's bigger or more well-known. And so both my folks and my in-laws are a part of our church. And so it's an interesting thing to pastor your parents and your in-laws, but also former coaches, teachers, and just seeing how the Lord allows you to be grown up in their eyes enough to share the gospel and to see the Spirit bring about a freshness of relationship, and seeing these folks that you knew and loved, maybe sometimes we're frustrated by, but come to faith. And so I think that's one of the gifts of small town ministries, that you just get to walk with people.
Over
the Lord work.
There are some challenges, like it's hard to hide in a small town.
Yes, yes.
You don't, what is it? I think it's McKenna Barron's Payton's wife said, and you don't have the luxury of choice. In other words, often don't have, like, there might only be one gym in town, or there, you know, so there are some significant challenges. Now, how about some guys? So you planted a church 10 years ago, guys who are tuning in and say, you know, I don't think God's leading me to plant in my hometown, but I feel called to a small, you know, isolated, forgotten place. What counsel would you have for them?
Yeah, I think you want to get into that community and be a learner. You want to find folks who are long-term residents there, whether it's at the bank or the mechanic shop where all the old farmers sit around, or if it's at the local coffee shop, and just ask questions. I think you got to be a good listener. You got to ask questions and begin to hear what the struggles are in that place. How do they view themselves? When we were working in Yemen, we would have Arabs all the time tell us what we believed instead of asking us what we believed. And I think if we're not careful as pastors, we can come into places and assume we know what the people there believe, and we tell them that, rather than learning how it is they actually view themselves, where they see their own struggles and where their idols are being revealed. And so I think just being a learner and coming in that sort of humility will earn you a lot of respect and a lot of traction, and just knowing it's a long, slow road.
I mean, we are, by the way, you listen to Gospel Nobody's podcast. If you're tuning in, you have any questions, you know, type them into the chat thing, or I guess that's how you get it here. I'm so old. Listen, I started pastoring, we had a typewriter, and it was pre, cell phone. So no cell phone. And the first technological thing I got was a pager or a beeper.
You know, okay.
That was like really hip stuff. And then when I got my first like mono colored, I think it was an XP, computer, it was something. Anyway, yeah. I'm saying all that. That's my excuse for like, I can't remember if we're on Zoom or what we're on, but anyway, if you have any questions, type them in. We'd love to chat with them about, how things went for your family. So you're talking about an extended 6 generations in Pampa. That's amazing. I don't think I've met anybody like that that's been there that long. So how about your immediate family? You mentioned your wife, Carmen, been married since 2002, mm-hmm. 18 years. She's near her family as well. So has this been generally a positive thing?
It has. David, maybe it sounds cliche, but like I truly wake up every day grateful that the Lord has me in Pampa. But listen, that I'm not trying to romanticize Pampa. Most people are here going, how can I get out of here? I really do. I'm grateful that the Lord has planted me here, and I hope that He allows me to pour out the rest of my life in this place. Carmen feels the same. She loves being back in a place that she is known, and got family all across the panhandle, so we love being near family, and getting to serve a place that is near and dear to our hearts. So
you were telling me a story about I think you were doing a funeral or something, and a leader in the town made the comment that he didn't see you staying there long.
Yes,
tell
sir.
That story.
We had a pretty prominent woman pass away it's been almost a year. And I did the service, and we were at the reception afterwards, and he was back in town. He is, has two homes, lives here and lives elsewhere, has the means to do that. But long-term has been from Pampa. And he came up to me and he said, hey, you did a good job. And it's clear that I think his actual phrase was, you're bigger than Pampa. And so you'll be leaving.
Wow. Okay.
And I, you know, immediately kind of pushed back of, you know, I don't think that way. I don't want to think that way. I love the place. I love being able to serve here. And basically he wanted to argue with me that it was just a matter of time before I would leave, because that's what you do. If you can leave, you should leave.
Right.
It was just, I couldn't reach him in that moment of understanding of why you would pour your life out in a place.
Right.
And so in a level of, I think he was trying to compliment me. I think I mostly felt offended a little bit and trying to help him understand that I'm glad to be here. I'm not stuck here.
It helps to love a place, doesn't it? I mean,
it does.
I find a lot of rural guys just in general love where they're at. Obviously, there are difficulties. And prior to COVID, we many of us just experienced that continual people moving away from rural places. I think COVID has changed the game on that and remote working. So I think rural places are now going to be strategic in a sort of, it makes sense now because people are flooding to rural places.
Right.
But there's a lot to enjoy about.
In our year four for us, we lost over the course of about 10 months, a third of the church. Because we're so oil field dependent, there was a rough year and a lot of folks leaving, jobs transferred, people moving. And I watched over the course of about 9 or 10 months, roughly a third to 40% of our church leave. And I think I remember in that moment, that season going, I don't, maybe I'm not cut out for this. Like, I don't mind being small and growing slowly, but man, if we're going to get gutted like this. And over the course of that year, the Spirit just leaning on me. I wish I could say it was a one-time prayer conversation, but it took months for him to convince me that my call is to pastor in Pampa. He didn't promise who was going to be here, just that this is where it was going to be.
Yeah.
And then my heart had to stay open and not be cold.
And our culture expects that if you are good and faithful, things will grow, but sometimes that's just not the case. Sometimes you have those bad years, bad seasons. We felt gutted by COVID. It's been devastating to our church. And yet I can look and say, we baptized six this year. We're taking in five new members. And we lost like more than that because of most people leaving and moving.
Right.
But 33 years into this, you still kind of have to remind, how long I've been pastoring, but you have to remind yourself, Jesus said he'd build his church.
Yes.
And while I want to see more conversions and I want to see God send workers to New England, New Hampshire specifically, and at the end of the day, I need to be faithful to the calling I know I have and find joy in
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. On my good days, I believe all that. On my hard days, I need to be reminded of that often.
So on the hard days, what do you do?
Honestly, David, one of the best things is the fact that we have the Redeemer Network, some men who have just walked with, we've walked together. And I think that's one of the benefits of Acts 29. It's one of the benefits of even what you're pushing with the Rural Collective and partnering guys who are in small forgotten places together so that they have someone to call or to text who explicitly understands that struggle.
So no questions have come in. So we intentionally are trying to partner rural churches in the United States with rural churches in other places. So tell us a little bit about your partnership with Johnny Pollock.
Yeah. So you were so gracious as to connect to Johnny and I, and that has been really life-giving. We've really only known each other, I think maybe for the last 6 weeks, but he and I have been messaging back and forth, encouraging one another, just pastoring one another. Our families are already, our kids, he has three children as well. We have three and they're pen pals, sending packages back and forth between Texas and Ireland. So I think they got some salsa from us today. So we'll see if they
Woo-hoo.
Like it. Yeah. And we got some good chocolate from them. And so it's been good for our kids, to be able to look at the map and to just begin to have a big picture of what it looks like, to know that there are other families who are giving their life to church planting in places. And so I've been super encouraged by Johnny and his family. So,
yeah. Can you describe a little bit of his context?
Yeah. So he's in, I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation, but Loughrea, Ireland, small town, 13,000, if I remember that correctly. And they're about 2.5 years old. And the first evangelical church, I believe, in almost 100 years.
So this is the Republic of Ireland. If you know a little bit of Irish history, the Northern Ireland is part of the UK. The Republic of Ireland, which is primarily known as more Catholic, but now it's sort of post-Catholic too. But
yes.
Yeah. So Yeah, as I think of your story there in Pampa, and I think of Johnny, and I can't pronounce it either, so I'm not going to correct you. But as I think of guys like you who are called to what you're doing, you mentioned that, you know, relationships, you mentioned the Redeemer Network, the
Yes.
broader Acts 29 family, which is getting larger. And so it's really important for us to sort of connect. And I think what you're modeling there are some strengths of sort of sustainability, like having relationships that will sustain you over the long haul. And then also feeling like you're not just confined to Pampa, but like Redeem, you know, my dream is that churches like Redeem of Pampa can have a partnership that has a reciprocal, but, you know, a significant investment in, I think it's Calvary Church. Is that the name?
Yes,
of
it's
church?
Calvary Church. Yes.
Calvary Church. Yeah. So, man, that's great. I've got a question here from Springbrook Church, which I'm guessing is going to be my friend Tom Desmond. Being a hometown guy, did you ever face any skepticism from other hometown people when you first planted the church?
Oh, definitely. So, yeah, you almost could categorize that. Who do you want to talk about? So pastors who were super skeptical that there was a need for another church, who church planning felt foreign to them. And honestly, the assumption was we were mad at someone or someone was mad at us, and that it would become known eventually that there was a split, because church planting was just off the radar of what it looked like for a new work to be birthed. So definitely some skepticism there. And then, yeah, with locals, I think it was a mixed bag. There were those who were super excited and encouraged because of our relationship. And then those who just really kept going, I don't know that Pampa needs another church. And David, I would say there's a difference between church saturation and gospel saturation. And it's hard to say that without pointing a finger that you're not necessarily trying to point. But we saw there's a lot of churches, there's not necessarily a lot of gospel. And we wanted to be a part of seeing the gospel held up as this beautiful good news. And so what that has meant is a lot of times we have to convince someone they're not saved so that they can hear the gospel for the first time.
Mm-hmm. We joked early on. Yeah, we joked early on in Acts 29. Is it harder to plant a church in the north, northeast or northwest, where it's far less churches is considered to be irrelevant and disdained?
Right.
We're in the south where it's culturally acceptable and everybody's a Christian. I used to joke, you know, you can be sleeping around and are drunk on weekends, but you still tithe and sing in the choir. And it's helpful for us to hear those terms again, because when we talk about being gospel-centered, gospel-driven, it's not like just getting the message right. It is what it means to David Pinckney and Jeremy Buck today, November 25th, 2020, the best news in our day today is that God loves sinners and loved us enough to not just kind of say he loves us, but to then do what was necessary in the work of Christ on the cross and the resurrection. So that then becomes now the joy. Like, I'm not rejected today because I feel like I'm an unworthy sinner, or I'm not accepted today because I feel like I'm a pretty good religious person and go to church. I'm in relationship with the Father because Christ and his redeeming work has made me right with the Father. And now I'm not just in, but I'm a full heir with Jesus. Do not fear, little flock. It is my Father's intention to give you his kingdom. Like, it's overwhelming news. And that changes my Wednesday. It changes.
Then we get to then be ambassadors of that news.
We are ambassadors of it. And then we are recipients of it in a way that creates joyful people. I'm in an exhausting time of my life because of a number of things. We are, you know, for the first time in 18 years, I'm a solo elder. I blame that somewhat on COVID. Nobody died, but it's certainly. And then I've got this job with X-Ray Now, which I love, and that's been challenging because I was on the road and now I can't be on the road. And then we're moving. My wife and I sold our house of 18 years to downsize and be in a far more manageable house for the next 20 years. And all of that stress on top of just other things I can feel exhausted. But if I have a conversation with Jeremy Buck, or yesterday it was a guy by the name of Elliot who's moved here to New Hampshire to help plant a rural church. If I sit around a believer and we just sort of ruminate about the goodness of God in our lives, the joy just overwhelms and So, any parting words, Jeremy?
Yeah, I would just want to say to guys who are looking to be gospel nobodies in forgotten places, that you are seen and known by the Lord, that He is that we are pushing forward to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. And David, we had nothing when we started. We had no money in the bank. It was just kind of a sincere call that we knew what God was doing. This, there were no real residencies in this area. We just kind of, Redeemer of Lubbock said, listen, we'll give you whatever we can. We'll love you, but good luck. And we did it without, I don't say that to boast. I say that the Lord met us and He was gracious, that our desire was for people to know and to see Him as the treasure that He is, for their affection to be stirred. And without a residency, without money in the bank, without a robust plan, other than we just wanted to be faithful to our King, God met us and has developed a 10-year work here in Pampa that we are so proud to be a part of, and we hope far outlives us. And so, listen, you don't have to have the best prospectus and the most money and the best team. The Spirit of God will go before you. He's been working. He'll continue to work in these places, and that there are folks who don't yet know Jesus who will become like brothers and sisters to us, because men and women will give their lives in forgotten places.
Man, that's beautiful, Jeremy. You've encouraged my heart. And it is good to know that though we, in the grand scheme of the world, of world history, and even church history, will remain gospel nobodies, we are not forgotten.
That's right.
And we are celebrated by our Father. And
that's right.
Jesus has never left us. He's always been at work in Pampa. And He's there with you, and He's there here with me in Concord, New Hampshire. Hey, thanks for joining me, Jeremy. I really appreciated your time today, and just am inspired every time I chat with you. And maybe someday on one of my journeys, I'll get to Pampa. And I don't think I'll come in November, though.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, we'll get you out here in tornado season then.
Oh golly. Well, hey, thanks for joining us for Gospel Nobodies, and we hope this has been an encouragement to you. If we can be any service to us, contact us through x29.com, and God bless.